briefly introduce Wayne here. Wayne Walls is Director of Cloud Strategy at Rackspace. He's an accomplished technical business leader with over 10 years of experience developing hosted solutions in startups, enterprise, and academic environments. An expert in challenges such as cloud adoption, IT transformation, global expansion, and consultative selling. Wayne has consistently outperformed expectations for numerous global 2K enterprises and startups around the world. With degrees in both economics and information systems, Wayne has a valuable perspective when it comes to analyzing business initiatives. Please welcome Wayne Walls to the Cloud Developers Summit and Expo.
So I actually do have Mr. Ryan Richard with me as well. Do you want to do a quick introduction, Ryan?
Sure. So my name is Ryan Richard. I'm on the same team as Wayne. I have a lot of experience in private cloud, OpenStack, public cloud, more recently with automation with tools like Chef and SaltStack, and been working a lot with really new technologies like Docker more recently.
Okay, so quick show of hands, how many people know what and who Rackspace is? All right, excellent, fantastic. So I'm gonna go and burn through some slides real fast. I wasn't really sure how many people know about Rackspace, so I just wanna give you a little bit of context about what Rackspace is, who we are, what we do, and it'll kind of get into the meat of the presentation here. So,
so I skipped about four slides.
Yeah, that sounds like, where are we at? Just have to wait a second. Wait a second. There we go. So hopefully that will have the opportunity for the entire time. So Rackspace certification specialization, one of the things that Rackspace is really about is
I think somewhere between under 350.
Yes. nationally. But at the end of the day, our vision has always remained the same, and it's to be recognized as one of the world's great service companies. Service is what we're all about. So everyone's familiar with Synaptic Support? Yep, heard of Synaptic Support? What does Synaptic Support mean to you? So, is this one on?
Yeah.
All right. So who wants to take a stab at that? Who wants to take a stab? What does Synaptic Support mean to you? Who's going to be our first selected person? I'm going to be asking a lot of questions for our interaction. Nobody? So, Synaptic Support to us basically means at any point in time, if you have a problem as a business, you need someone to call. That is something that we pride ourselves on. 24/7, 365, any time of the day. You have a problem, you call Rackspace, you don't get a culture. You get a real human being. You get someone who's ready to hear your problem out and actually help you solve it. We will help get you to the right people to solve those issues. No matter what time of day it is, we will never change that stance. That is one of our bars of Synaptic Support and what we actually build our company on. So, how many cloud users are in your audience? A few. All right. So, in terms of cloud, one of the things that Rackspace has started to really kind of shift our focus on, and there's been a lot of discussion in the news around the cloud price. You have Amazon, you have Microsoft, you have Google, and all of them are just battling each other. And they're battling each other to the bottom. They're trying to become the cheapest infrastructure provider in the world. That is fantastic news. We want them to keep doing that because competition is fantastic for the end user. For the consumer, it is good. That's going to mean lower prices for everybody. That is just brilliant. Me as a consumer, I want that. I absolutely want that. But Rackspace's position is a little bit different. We're not actually engaged in these price wars. We're not trying to just be a raw infrastructure provider. Once again, it goes back to our core, which is all about service. How many people think cloud is easy? Agreed. Cloud's pretty hard. There's a lot of deviations. There's a lot of things you can do. There's a lot of things you can mess up. So what we want to do is we want to take service to the next level. Instead of just offering service on pure bare metal, on your typical Dell and HP servers that are running Linux and Microsoft stacks, we want to make cloud easy for you as well. How do you want to actually take cloud and build it into your business? How do you want to enable your business to run more efficiently with cloud technologies? So that's where we come out with this new category that we're building, managed cloud. So managed cloud is a brand new category. Nobody really knows. They've heard the term, or maybe they haven't heard the term. So we're trying to create it and bring it to market. Well, we got a little bit of validation in that. And Gartner most recently released a new magic quadrant that's called Cloud-Enabled Managed Hosting. So this is a new quadrant. And what this is they're basically saying there is a lot of people that they have focused their specialization around making cloud easy. That's what this quadrant actually means. There's another entirely different quadrant that is just for infrastructure as a service. That is the quadrant where you're looking at raw infrastructure. Who's giving you the raw pieces to kind of build what you need to build and piece it together and create a solution? Well, we're saying we want to help you build that solution. We have the tools in place. And it's not only about public cloud. Public cloud, it's a fantastic, effective, not the support. This is more than just raw infrastructure. This is about figuring out what business problem you're trying to solve and what do we need to do to get there. That's what we're going to do. We want to partner with you to get to the next level of efficiency for your business. All right. So there's our business commercial. We're all done with that. Let's move on to the actual meat of the presentation here. So the title of the talk is Operational Excellence in a Cloud World. So, a couple of you mentioned you are running apps in the cloud, you are using the cloud. So, got a quick poll here. So, we're going to give this a go. Maybe it'll be a little bit easier to go this direction. So, in terms of your production application, what I want you to do is think about one app in particular that you are running in production today, and based on these categories, it being ad hoc, we're standardizing, we're running the industry standard, we're leader or world class, you guys go ahead and vote and say, where do you think today you believe this production workload is running at? Where do you think it is?
You can use your cell phones, you can text.
Yes. Text at 2233 with your actual answer.
Or you can use your laptop, but there's only one out, so. Hopefully. If no one does, then we can raise our hands if that's easier. Anyone feel like they're ad hoc? Standardizing? Maybe? If you think about a cloud app. Right. Oh, we got Oracle and IBM and Boeing in the room. It's got to be world class, right?
Okay. So, kicking back over. What we want to talk about is at Praxis, you have this group called the Product Operations Reliability Team, or PORT for short. And as I mentioned before, Praxis is imperfect. We learned a lot of lessons from the beginning of the business. So
I'm not even sure that graphic does it justice. I feel like world class is just...
Yeah, probably off the chart.
Yeah. We try to be, right?
Try
to be industry standard.
That would be a win for us. If ever since our Rackspace was sitting around 3, we'd be operating at a fantastic efficiency and we'd be doing things very, very well. We may only have one system in all of our systems that is world class. We may have 0 because it is that hard to really get the systems going. So, in a scorecard, there's a lot of information in here. So based on the amount of time that we have, we decided there's going to be 2 that we're going to focus on today based on the audience and based on the actual conference itself. And the 2 that we're going to focus on is architectural operability and automation. And what we're going to do is we're going to actually dive into each of those, walk you through each of the 5 stages, and actually give you proof points of things that we believe if you were or you're not doing these things, these are ways that you can actually come and influence your company to actually start moving the needle towards one of the progressive levels where you're at. Most people said we're not standardizing, so that's why I figured out this is what I'm talking about. And then we'll see what we have to do or what we have started to identify as potential steps to start moving forward. Now, the other side of it, we don't know everything. This is purely our opinion on how we believe this. So what I'd love to do is get feedback from the audience as well of what are we missing? What are you doing that you believe meets some of these criteria as well? So I'd love to get that. All right. So architectural authority. Ryan, you want to take this first one for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we start thinking about ad hoc, this is generally like something like a new system, a new application. We've even talked internally about renaming some of these like ad hoc to like startup, right? So it is new. So when we think about something new that's starting somewhere, it's very common in like Rackspace, someone will write a tool and they'll just run it like on their desk. If it's like an internal operations tool, it'll run on we used to do this like 10 years ago before we had cloud servers readily available. Someone would go steal a white box from IT, like hook it up to a network. And, we don't do that anymore. But now you see people running like a single cloud server, which is obviously just a pretty bad idea. Things like password stored in plain text. Again, I'm writing my brand new app, I'm running my brand new infrastructure. I'm just gonna store the password to it in some wiki somewhere. A lot of people don't think about security this early on. Manual user management. Oh, you want access to the system? Let me log in. Let me add you a user. Let me set your password. Okay, here's your username. We're using local user management, and we're not using directory services like LDAP or some more advanced directory service out there. And this is often very much developer driven, right? So somebody is creating this tool and they're throwing it on a system. There's no operations. There's nobody thinking about security or any of the standards that we want to lay out here, right? So that's very much ad hoc. You don't really see that too much except for in the like very new space. So standardizing is probably where we see most applications run. They might be running on some sort of external platform service. That could be a VMware ESX cluster managed by a different team. That's an external service. To me, as a developer, that would be an external service. That could be a cloud like Rackspace, right? Could be a private cloud. There's all kinds of options, but some sort of external service. And now we're starting to get into, there's an operations team involved in the planning. So, how is my application going to scale? Am I set up for redundancy for HA? What's my database failover scenario look like? Am I active, passive? There's an operations team focused on a lot of those problems. And we start to think about back-end development as a priority as opposed to just raw ideas. Often you'll see things like shared accounts, like one, you know, multiple users might share a local account. Like all the developers might use a dev account, for instance. That's very, very common, especially in the web world. We have way too many customers doing that. So, you know, it's not really something you want to be doing. And then you start to see the separation of stateful and stateless services. And what we mean by that is I have my web server, obviously, or I have my web and my app tiers running on their servers, but my database, which is a very stateful thing, that is running inside of a different system, right? So now I'm starting to break out into a service-oriented architecture, is really kind of what that is saying. You could take that a step further and think about parts of your application that are stateful and stateless. That's, you know, if they write local files, that's a stateful application. Only for architectural.
Yeah, only on the architectural side of the house.
Yeah.
Yes, raise your hand.
No? Are we missing anything?
So what do you think we're missing here? I saw sort of a hand go up right there. No? Yeah?
I mean, I'm not sure what you guys are responsible for at your companies, but if you were developing a new system or standing up a new infrastructure for a new application, and you figured this would be the standard at your company, right? This is how we do it. You know, are we missing anything? There might be some compliance stuff here, right? Backup? Yeah. So we have a section which we're not going to go into about recoverability, which is where we really dive into backup. Yeah, but that would certainly be part of I think that could be part of architectural, actually.
Sure.
Where's the backup system? Is there a backup system? Yeah.
Okay. All right, so moving on to industry standard. This is where probably the majority of our conversations occur from. So Ryan and I have developer operations backgrounds. I'm not going to go and call some DevOps engineers
I'm going to count DevOps.
So typically at this point, applications and services are starting to be kind of decoupled and not actually tied into one particular infrastructure provider. So one of the things that is commonly discussed when we talk about cloud architectures is vendor lock-in. A lot of people say, hey, if you use this provider, you're locked in, you can't move. If you use service from another provider, you're locked in and you can't move. And in the event that you have a ultra successful
I'd say what's interesting about that is if you look at the startup space right now, that is actually, you could probably move that line to the very first slide. That is bar none a standard in the startup space. You do CI as like the almost the first thing you do, right? So that's a big difference between, I think, where enterprises and most companies are and where startups are right now.
Absolutely, great point.
Yeah. Which network administrators probably hate.
Which they absolutely hate. And the last thing we start getting into regional redundancy. This is where people start coming in and saying, okay, I have my app running in one region, but just as we talk about an ad hoc, it's just like putting the entire system on one server. That's a way to get started fast, but it's not a safe way to do it. Well, this is the same thing. Are you going to put your entire application in one particular region, and the event that region goes down, you have a problem.
Yep. So when we start thinking about industry leader, things start to get a little more interesting, especially this first one, which I don't think a lot of people think about. Data dictating what technology is being used. Too many times when we're building something new, there's another team responsible, a DBA service maybe. I have some DBAs, and you're like, you have to use Oracle version X or MySQL 5.1 or whatever, because that's their expertise. Now we start to see industry leaders saying, you know, my data really fits really, really well into something like MongoDB. And that's cool, and we're going to use it. And part of my data actually still fits into a relational database. Part of my data fits into something else, like maybe a graph database. And so we start to see industry leaders are starting to become very polyglot in their in how they're choosing their data stores. We see fine-grained access controls, and that actually might be more along the lines of very much limiting access to anyone, right? Industry leaders, especially in the cloud world, like logging into systems is extremely, extremely rare. That's actually something we mentioned on the next slide too. But even in an industry leader, it's very rare. Consolidating central access management, that's actually pretty maybe standard in the enterprise world, very much not standard in the startup world. Full audit trails, and the early adoption of emerging technologies. This is a really big one because historically, industry leaders would probably be, we're incredibly stable, and we're on this very much the stable technology that never changes. We'll update in 5 years when we have to, or 10 years. I'm sure we still have systems internally running that are over 10 years old. But what we see with leaders is there's a new technology that comes out that fits that space. They're willing to make that jump, right? They're willing to invest those development resources to switch an application for that new piece of technology. So that's our take on industry leader. Does anybody agree with it, disagree with it?
So in terms of early adoption,
Anyone think it's a good thing? Yeah. Anyone think it's a bad thing? Yeah.
Is anyone doing this today? Is anyone, do you mind sharing a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, we use OpenStack, and we're trying to build our own Docker support into it. We just weren't happy with the way that it used AWS and some other things, so we're trying to bolt it on ourselves.
Yeah. I would definitely call that, that might even just be a little crazy. So, no, that's great. I mean, look, Docker and, I mean, OpenStack's been around for a little bit, but, you know, Docker definitely emerging technology, right? Slight pitch on that. We're giving a Docker workshop in here 8:30 tomorrow morning. So, that's going to be very hands-on. All right, that was my pitch for our other talk. 8:45. We promised to kill the hotel Wi-Fi during that demo. So. There's obviously security implications on some of these things, right? You might have security or compliance reasons where you must have different identity systems. That's absolutely the case for some companies. Not the majority, but certainly some. And we're almost out of time. I think we should try and get through world class real quick.
Yes.
And then we'll probably be pretty much out of time at that point.
All right, so once we go to world class,
they basically came out and told you, hey, if we're going to be making an update across our cloud, this is when it's going to happen, so schedule for it. Well, shortly after that, a lot of customers said, we don't want to schedule for that. That's your problem. So they said, OK. They iterated quickly, and they put a checkbox in their control panel that said if their servers actually lived in a zone that had a scheduled maintenance, before the maintenance would happen, it would actually migrate that server to a different zone that would be unimpacted. That is zero customer impact. That is world class. I don't think any of us are going to argue that Google is a world class technology company. They do some things super fantastic. I like what they did there. Being from Rackspace, I have no problem giving them all the props in the world. That is well designed and well thought out. But there's other ways you can design these applications as well that you wouldn't need something like that. If you have true stateful services, you don't have to move them from zone to zone. A whole zone can go away and your application can still run. So that's where you have some of the self-healing stuff, and it also leads into geo-redundant systems. Because at this point, you can lose whole data centers, you can lose whole providers, and your application will continue to run, no problems at all.
This is the, you know, this is the Netflix, right?
Right, Netflix, classic example.
Classic example of this.
Right. So one of the things with...
No, go ahead, you're fine.
Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay. Another 5 minutes.
We got 2 minutes. Oh, five
you're
minutes?
Okay.
5 minutes?
Yeah, I'm not going to hold up the sign.
Perfect. So what Ryan preluded earlier, you know, manual or human node interaction is very rare at this point. This is something a lot of people hear, and then you're just like, what? You are absolutely insane. But you're not logging into servers anymore. You don't allow people to log into servers.
That's the best user management.
That's
no
the
users.
Best user management. How many people have been involved in a fat finger incident that caused some type of downtime? Just one, two, three? Yeah. I would say probably all of us, and maybe we don't even know it. Typically, when you look at downtime of applications, traditionally, it is user error. Usually, it is a system administrator making an error. It's not a bug in the software. It's not the application. It's usually user error. So this actually pulls that away and says, let the system, let the automation actually run your entire application for you. Then it goes into unauthorized changes trigger automated responses. So this is also some more world-class stuff that, you know, I honestly cannot tell you I know someone that's doing this today because it's that hard. This is where you have something that there's going to be a change. There's some type of declarative system that has deployed your application, and it's going to go, actually, this node is not doing exactly what it's supposed to do, so it needs to stop serving traffic. So I'm going to actually kill connections to it. I'm going to pull out a load balancer, and I'm going to put it over here to the side so someone can either triage it and figure out what went wrong, or just say, forget it. It did not work as expected. Kill it, boot up a new one, let it get into the load balancer itself, and continue serving traffic. Because you don't care. All that you know is your system failed somewhere along the way, and you just need to kill it, redeploy it, and it works. Then lastly, we get into service discovery. This is where a lot of people are starting to say, well, it's great that our systems know that these systems are finding problems, but how do they know what to do when they come back online? And you have traditional configuration management systems that provide that glue that tie these systems back together for you, but maybe they're multiple levels deep. Maybe you have multiple tiers. Well, tools like services or service discovery tools like Zookeeper and etcd actually have your applications come online, they check into the service, and it goes, oh, you are a caching service, so you need to do this because your task is this. Or you are a database server, and you're a database slave in particular. Here's the master, here's where you need to actually pull your data from. So these service discovery tools actually help automate all this away for you.
It's the backbone of distributed systems, right?
An absolute backbone. So we would be going into automation right here, but we're out of time.
We talked too much.
So yeah, we talked quite a bit. So quick poll before you guys leave. The guys that said that they're doing standardizing, do you feel comfortable in standardizing, or do you feel that you're in a different zone now?
You don't feel like they should be higher?
Higher? Lower?
Than what they thought? Lower?
Anybody?
No? All right. We had one guy vote. Higher?
What? Okay.
Higher, probably.
All right. Well, that is it. Any questions to wrap up? We'll be around if you want to chat.
A great question. So Rackspace, being a managed hosting provider, not purely just an infrastructure provider, we actually have access to our customer systems. So we proactively patched all of our customer systems. And we still are because they're coming out with new patches, right? And so some of our customers obviously can like lock us out, and some customers have restrictions on who can log in, and those customers are unique. But as a managed hosting provider, we can proactively do that for our customers. And we do. We've done it a number of times. We also had to patch the Xen vulnerability last weekend. I don't know if you guys heard about that, but Amazon and Rackspace both had to reboot their entire clouds.
Big percentages.
All the Xen stuff. So, as a service provider, we had to do that. For the bash bug, as a managed hosting provider, we can proactively do that for our customers. Because we have the automation in place to touch all their systems. So, yeah. And luckily, bash isn't so important that it's going to break their application.
Yeah, that was a pretty easy one.
Yeah.
Compared to Heartbleed.
Kernel vulnerabilities are a lot more fun.
Yeah.
Those ones are much more fun. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to talk to both of you.
Sure.
Anything else?
Absolutely.
Are we all good?
That's why Marty Lafferty brought me on board.
All right. Well, thank you guys very much for your time. Like I said, we'll be around. I'm happy to talk. And hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you, everyone.